Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we open our show with a wrap-up of the No Kings rallies held across the nation, around the world, and right here in San Diego County, where more than 85,000 people turned out, including several rallies in East County. Then we'll tell you why a much-awaited grant for Campo Road improvements in the Casa de Oro area of Spring Valley was canceled by the Trump administration, and some local reactions. After Governor Gavin Newsom closed down the freeway due to concerns of live artillery fire over Interstate 5 during a 250th anniversary celebration of the Marines, an artillery shell exploded, sending shrapnel onto the freeway, striking a CHP car, and we'll have details. East County State Senator Brian Jones has had a bill signed by Governor Gavin Newsom that he hopes will revise how sexually violent predators are housed and help prevent their release into communities. From California News Service, on our Green Scene Report, we'll tell you why green energy is benefiting California and neighboring states, according to a recent report, and how action by the Trump administration is undermining that. Also hear about radical reforms to the refugee admittance program now proposed by President Donald Trump. Plus, on Destination East County, hear about all the most fun festivals and events coming up across East County in late October and November. Then, on the second half of our show today, we'll have a special treat for you as we re-air our Halloween special telling you ghost stories from East County. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. No Kings rallies held on Saturday, October 18th, drew an estimated 7 million protesters nationwide, including estimates ranging from 25,000 to 50,000 in downtown San Diego's Waterfront Park and over 85,000 countywide. San Diego organizer Dane Culbreth calls the protests unifying for democracy and opposing the authoritarian trends we are witnessing federally under the Trump administration. In East County, participation in the No Kings movement is growing. Organizers and multiple participants estimate El Cajon's rally at about 3,000 people, triple the size of a June rally. Erica Wise and her mom came down from Alpine to participate in the El Cajon protest, carrying signs that read, "Love my country, ashamed of my government," and "Democracy, not dictator." Suzanne Hansen wore a Statue of Liberty costume and carried a sign with the statue's poem, "Welcoming Immigrants." Elsewhere in the region, Carlsbad drew about 10,000 participants, Rancho Bernardo 5,000, Chula Vista 3,000, and several other communities held smaller rallies. In Ramona, about 300 people joined in the No Kings protest, where American and gay rights flags could be seen, as well as an inflatable pink dinosaur. Vice President J.D. Vance, speaking one day before the rallies, called the No Kings protests a hate America movement of what he called the Marxists, the Socialists, the Anarchists, and the pro-Hamas wing of the far-left Democratic Party. Local organizers counter. The far right has called these rallies un-American, but there's nothing more American than exercising our First Amendment rights to peacefully protest. There were no arrests reported at any No Kings rally nationwide of protesters, although several MAGA Republicans were arrested for threatening or causing violence directed at protesters. The No Kings organizers had urged their participants to remain peaceful, belying efforts by the Trump administration to paint the movement as dangerous extremists. Locally, the mood was festive. Many protesters carried flags or wore patriotic garb. Others dressed in inflatable costumes as frogs, unicorns, and other whimsical characters, mimicking Portland, Oregon protesters' tactics to show that their city is not the war zone claimed by President Donald Trump when he sent in the National Guard. There were drummers, bagpipers, and a variety of other musicians as well visible at the San Diego rallies. Several public officials also turned out. Supervisor Monica Montgomery Stepp spoke at Waterfront Park. Mark Roback, Ojai Water Board member, posted on Facebook, "Rode by a pro-democracy gathering. They were all very well-behaved and focused on the Constitution." He posted a photo of himself in a patriotic bicycling outfit alongside Lemon Grove Mayor Allison Snow. A contingent of Native Americans joined the march downtown, where Barona tribal member Bobby Wallace also spoke to the large crowd. The protest drew people of all ages, from young people to senior citizens. At San Diego State University, around 400 protesters turned out, including students and others. Not everyone agreed with the sentiments expressed by protesters. On Facebook, Ricky Grasser posted, "Seriously, what's the purpose of dressing up like a goof or something different and walking around in the heat, holding ridiculous signs?" He adds, "You guys embarrass yourselves." On Facebook, Mitchell Sterling wrote, "Even our quiet, sleepy, tiny town of Borrego Springs, California turned out nearly 200 protesters on No King's Day to demand Trump and his lawless administration's removal and the restoration of democracy." Sterling sent a photo of senior citizens in Borrego Springs flanking a sign that reads, "Are we great yet? Because I just feel embarrassed." Moving forward, San Diego organizer Culbreth says the No Kings rallies will continue to oppose the efforts to centralize executive power, mirroring plans in Project 2025. He concludes, "We continue to demand the protection for democratic institutions, civil rights, and the rule of law, transparency, accountability, and truth over chaos, cruelty, and corruption. We also continue to call for elected leadership and good governance that serves the people and not personal power, personal enrichment, or spectacle." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Trump administration has clawed back a grant of over $1 million to San Diego County for long-awaited improvements along Campo Road, a historic thoroughfare in Spring Valley's Casa de Oro community. In an email to the county, the U.S. Department of Transportation called the plan hostile to motor vehicles, even though that plan is backed by the Casa de Oro Community Planning Group and has broad support from community residents after years of public meetings. Plans were in place for 5 lanes to be narrowed down to 2, with dedicated bicycle lanes added, as well as a median and a roundabout, new landscaping, and much more. The grant was part of the Safe Streets and Roads for All program. David Shorey, a member of the Casa de Oro Alliance, told East County Magazine that for more than 5 years, residents involved in the alliance have been seeking to transform the community to a drive-to destination instead of a drive-through destination via this demonstration project. The more than $1.1 million grant would have covered nearly all of the project's total $1.45 million cost. Shorey says that the community push has been focused on working to improve driver and pedestrian safety and create an environment that is open and welcoming to a diversity of businesses. The Casa de Oro Alliance's vision also includes offering an attractive, safe, pedestrian-friendly, and popular destination for dining, entertainment, and shopping with angled parking and new storefronts. But the letter from Maria Lefevre, Executive Director for the Office of the Undersecretary of Transportation for Policy for the Department of Transportation, said that the department is canceling the funds because the department's new priority is reducing roadway traffic congestion by preserving or increasing roadway capacity for motor vehicles. County Supervisor Monica Montgomery Stepp's District 4 area includes Campo Road and Casa de Oro. She believes the current Trump administration needs to take a better look at its decisions. The supervisor says, "It's deeply troubling to see this administration making decisions that affect communities they've never set foot in and for residents they've never taken the time to engage." She adds, "Casa de Oro and our entire region has spent decades working to build a safer, more inclusive, and walkable community. To see that progress threatened in favor of car-centric planning is unacceptable. We will continue fighting for and finding ways to fund projects that reflect the vision and needs of our communities." Colin Parrott, CEO and General Counsel for Circulate San Diego, the nonprofit that advocates for better mobility options and vibrant neighborhoods through public policy, safe streets, and sustainable growth, calls the Trump administration's decision to revoke the Campo Road funding a step backwards for safety. He adds, "This project had strong community support to promote safety for all users and would not have been hostile to automobiles. Everyone should feel safe on our streets, including pedestrians, bicyclists, and motorists alike." Lisa Stewart, president of the Casa de Oro Alliance, says that Campo Road was an outstanding candidate for the grant. The road has multiple entrances and drive-throughs with narrow sidewalks that make it difficult to navigate for pedestrians and can cause issues for cyclists. Stewart said her husband, an avid cyclist, has to drive his car with his bike on a bike rack outside of the area if he wants to go on longer rides and to avoid safety hazards along Campo Road. She believes the demonstration project would have proved a positive learning experience for the county, especially if it wanted to look into making similar changes on roads elsewhere. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
An artillery round exploded prematurely over Interstate 5 on Saturday, October 18th, causing metal shrapnel to strike a California Highway Patrol vehicle. The incident occurred while Vice President J.D. Vance was at Camp Pendleton for the 250th anniversary of the Marine Corps. President Donald Trump refused to cancel the live fire demonstration over the freeway even after Governor Gavin Newsom, the CHP, and local leaders voiced safety concerns. Newsom ordered busy I-5 closed for 4 hours during the event, drawing criticism from conservatives, but the accidental explosion over the highway proved such concerns valid. Had other vehicles been on the freeway, additional chunks of shrapnel could have caused damage or injury to motorists. After the incident, the governor stated on his social media, "We love our Marines and owe a debt of gratitude to Camp Pendleton, but next time, the Vice President and the White House shouldn't be so reckless with people's lives for their vanity projects." Prior to the governor ordering the freeway closed, the Marine Corps had refused to do so, insisting shooting live fire over the freeway would be safe. In a statement, the Marine Corps said at the time, "All training events will occur on approved training ranges and comport with established safety protocols. No public highways or transportation routes will be closed." CHP Border Division Chief Tony Coronado stated in a press release after the incident, "This was an unusual and concerning situation. It is highly uncommon for any live fire or explosive training activity to occur over an active freeway." He added, "As a Marine myself, I have tremendous respect for our military partners, but my foremost responsibility is ensuring the safety of the people of California and the officers who protect them." Although no injuries were reported, thankfully, CHP personnel immediately notified the Marine Corps at the scene, who then canceled firing additional live ordnance over the freeway, and the area was swept for further evaluation. The CHP vehicle that was struck was in the area where CHP officers were supporting a traffic break along I-5 during the live fire event. The CHP has filed an internal report on the incident with a recommendation to conduct an additional after-action review into the planning, communication, and coordination between federal, state, and local government around the event to strengthen protocols for future demonstrations and training events near public roadways or over civilian infrastructure. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
For years, residents and representatives of East County have complained that the area has been used as a dumping ground for sexually violent predators, putting neighbors and children at risk. Now, a bill signed into law by Governor Gavin Newsom offers hope for relief. Senate Bill 380 was authored by Senator Brian Jones, a Santee Republican and the Senate's minority leader. Supported by a coalition of local government, law enforcement, and victims' advocacy groups, SB 380 implements a recommendation from the California State Auditor's Office for the Department of State Hospitals to study the feasibility of transitional housing for sexually violent predators out on conditional release. The state auditor's recommendation came after Jones secured an audit of the state's handling of the conditional release program. The department refused to implement the recommendation on its own, requiring legislative action. Senator Jones calls the bill a big win for communities like mine that have been treated as dumping grounds for these violent predators. He thanked the governor for recognizing the need to address this serious issue. He adds, "This new law is a battle won against a state agency that has repeatedly ignored calls from the public, elected officials, and the state auditor to fix this very broken system. Families in our neighborhoods should not have to live in fear, wondering if any day the state might drop in a new neighbor with a proven penchant for sexual predation. Different from most new laws, which take effect January 1st, Jones drafted SB 380 to include an urgency clause stipulating that it take effect immediately upon the governor's signing. Jones says, with the governor's signature, the department must immediately begin their investigation into housing these SVPs in state-run transitional housing rather than dropping them like bombs onto our communities. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Clean transportation projects in California and across the country are paying off, according to a new report. The research firm Atlas Public Policy analyzed the benefits of the Biden-era Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act of 2021 and the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. The report cites California's Port of Oakland, which is updating its aging equipment and reducing air pollution with a $322 million grant through the EPA's Clean Ports Program. Matt Davis with the Port of Oakland says the money will fund zero-emissions cargo handling machinery and electric trucks for cargo deliveries.
This provides local benefits through reduction of pollutants, but it also introduces a high degree of technical modernization and reliability because some of these pieces of equipment just have a lot less moving parts, frankly, that don't require as much maintenance.
Davis says neighboring states will also benefit as the port reduces its greenhouse gas emissions. Tina Hodges with Atlas Public Policy points to the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program, or NEVI, funded by the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. The report says by the end of last year, nearly 60% of the nation's busiest highway corridors had fast-charging stations for electric vehicles every 50 miles or more. That's up from 38% in 2020. Hodges says it's just one example of the upsides of these investments.
We found large benefits with cleaner air, new manufacturing jobs, and transportation benefits, affordable ways to get around.
The Trump administration paused NEVI earlier this year, asking states to update and resubmit their plans for EV infrastructure by September. The report says funding for some programs is in doubt, with Congress rescinding more than $2.7 billion this year, money that has been appropriated but not yet committed to a contract. Hodges hopes lawmakers will see the value in what's happened with these dollars.
This is a key moment for Congress to decide whether they'll continue to fund these clean transportation programs or stop the momentum.
I'm Laura Hatch, California News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
San Diego County has admitted more refugees from around the world than any other county in the United States in the years just prior to the current Trump administration, welcoming people from Africa, Asia, the Middle East, Latin America, and Europe. Our region has been enriched by these newcomers in many ways, such as the array of international restaurants and cultural attractions in the San Diego region. But President Donald Trump, after already slashing aid to refugees, now proposes to sharply restrict admissions and prioritize admitting predominantly white, English-speaking Europeans who claim persecution due to opposing mass migration or supporting populist political parties such as far-right neo-Nazi groups in Europe. The New York Times reports that Trump aims to slash refugee admissions from 125,000 to just 7,500 this fiscal year, at a time when the world has 42.7 million documented refugees seeking safe havens. After already announcing priority for white South Africans, the racist former ruling class there, despite no evidence of persecution, Trump now wants to prioritize Europeans with views that align with religious or racist extremist groups, according to Human Rights Watch, including a German anti-immigrant party whose leaders have trafficked in anti-Semitism and Holocaust denial. How many people claiming persecution due to opposing mass immigration are currently huddled in refugee camps? There aren't any, Human Rights Watch reports. Yet refugee status is supposed to be defined as people who have fled their homelands due to credible fears of persecution, such as Sudanese refugees in Chad and Afghan refugees in Pakistan, or Myanmar refugees in Bangladesh. Afghan refugees are now being deported from Pakistan back to Afghanistan due to Trump yanking protected status from Afghans promised safe haven in the U.S., who now fear for their lives under Taliban rule. Sean Vandiver, director of Afghan Evac, told the UK's independent newspaper, "When the U.S. signals that some identities are more deserving of safety than others, it diminishes our standing. It tells Afghan allies, persecuted minorities, and families still waiting in danger that their sacrifices and their lives are matterless. We see this firsthand. Thousands of Afghans believed America when we said, 'I stand with us and will stand with you,'" Vandiver says, adding, "To now prioritize Europeans over them is not just inequitable, it is an unconscionable betrayal." The new actions come after the administration already slashed financial aid and health care for refugees. Trump's so-called One Big Beautiful Bill, signed into law, restricts the eligibility of refugees for Medicaid, Medicare, children's health insurance, and even emergency food aid. Moreover, Secretary of State Marco Rubio shifted over $250 million out of the department's Migration and Refugee Assistance Fund into paying immigrants to self-deport. Naomi Steinberg, Vice President of U.S. Policy for Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, the world's oldest refugee resettlement agency, says Trump's proposal to radically overhaul the refugee system in the U.S. would deliberately leave vulnerable people in danger all around the world, rendering it unrecognizable. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with some spooky Halloween events the last week of October, as well as notable November happenings. The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association hosts its annual Pumpkin Express Halloween celebration on October 25th and 26th. You can ride decorated vintage rail cars through the San Diego County backcountry aboard the historic San Diego and Arizona Railway route. After the ride, guests can decorate pumpkins from an outdoor patch and view displays of haunted train cars and Halloween scenes. Passengers are encouraged to come in costumes for this family-friendly event. You can get tickets at psrm.org/pumpkin. Olma's Pumpkin Patch in Lakeside is open Tuesdays through Sundays in October. In addition to picking pumpkins, visitors can enjoy a hay maze, a petting zoo for all ages, a hayride, duck races, and more. Children delight in interactive games and activities, while adults can sample delicious pumpkin-themed treats and fall-flavored products. Learn more and book reservations online at olmasfamilyfarm.com. That's O-M-A-S, olmasfamilyfarm.com. Famed Ritz Pumpkin Patch, including giant pumpkins, Bates Nut Farm in Valley Center also hosts several October events, including a costume contest and parade October 25th and a Halloween doggy costume contest and parade on October 26th. Find a full list of Bates Nut Farm events at batesnutfarm.biz. Lions, Tigers, and Bears Sanctuary and Alpine is hosting a spooky camp over on October 24th under the stars. The fun includes campfire songs, pumpkin carving, a Halloween costume contest, and an all-ages haunted house. Enjoy the animal trivia challenge, make s'mores by the campfire, and sip hot cocoa at their Big Cat and Wildlife Sanctuary. For reservations, visit lionstigersandbears.org/happenings. Come dressed in your best costume and watch rescued big cats and bears devour their pumpkin treats during the Pumpkin Bash at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine on October 25th at 10 a.m. Pumpkins are stuffed with delicious goodies for fall-themed enrichment as the animals play with their pumpkins and gobble down goodies. For tickets, visit lionstigersandbears.org. The San Diego Zoo Safari Park in San Pasqual holds its Autumn Festival each Saturday and Sunday in October. You can enjoy viewing wildlife, watching special entertainment, and tasting culinary comforts for plenty of family fun. Learn more at sdzsafaripark.org. The park at Viejas and Alpine hosts a Boo Bash Halloween party October 31st, featuring music, dancing, and devilishly good food. Enjoy music from two DJs, plus a Bruno Mars tribute band, a costume contest with $7,500 in prizes, themed photo booth, Halloween cocktails, caricature artists, and Halloween treats. For details, visit viejas.com. Fort Cross Old-Timey Adventures near Julian hosts its last Haunted Harvest Night on October 26th, featuring spooky fun. Activities include a haunted hayride with walk through a ghostly forest, ghost stories, a hoedown, and jug band music. For details and tickets, you can visit fortcross.com. The 13th Annual Ramona Art, Wine, and Music Festival is heading to the Beegent Ranch in Ramona on Saturday, November 1st from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. The event features wines and craft beverage tastings, food for purchase, all-day live local music, a live auction at 2 p.m., and the opportunity to view and buy handcrafted art from local fine artists. Proceeds from the festival benefit the Ramona Heart Mural Project. For information and tickets, visit RamonaArtAndWineFest.net. Summer's Pass Farms in Flint Springs will host an antique and craft fair Saturday and Sunday, November 1st and 2nd from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Shop from over 50 fine craftsmen and expert artisans offering collectibles, antiques, and a garden sale on the farm's spacious lawn. For details, visit summerspassfarms.com. Wheel of Fortune is coming to Viejas Casino and Resort November 8th at 6 p.m. as part of a 60-city national tour. Hosted by a celebrity guest host, Wheel of Fortune Live will randomly select audience members to come up on stage to spin the famous wheel and show their skill by calling consonants, buying vowels, and solving puzzles for an opportunity to win prizes including vacations and cash. Fans will also be able to audition on-site for the chance to appear as a contestant on a future episode of Wheel of Fortune alongside hosts Ryan Seacrest and Vanna White on TV. For tickets, visit viejas.com. Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa continues its performances of the Tony Award-winning play Copenhagen, November 1st at 7:30 p.m. and again on November 8th and 9th at 2 p.m. The play explores an explosive confrontation inspired by actual events that have intrigued and baffled historians for more than 50 years, a 1941 meeting between two brilliant physicists, Niels Bohr of Denmark and Germany's Werner Heisenberg. The two men were longtime friends whose work together opened the way to the atomic bomb, but who were now on opposite sides of World War II. For tickets and details, visit LamplightersTheaterLaMesa.com. Members of the San Diego Astronomy Association invite you to enjoy stargazing at Mission Trails Regional Park on the first Friday of each month starting at dusk. The next event is November 7th. For more information, you can visit Mission Trails Regional Park at mtrp.org. The Olaf Weghorst Museum and Western Heritage Center in El Cajon will host its first annual fashion show fundraiser, Boots and Bells, on November 8th from 2 to 6 p.m. The event will feature designs of local artist and designer Don Seabaugh, whose wearable art blends color, creativity, and Western spirit. In addition to models wearing fashionable designs, the event will also feature a silent auction, cocktail fair, wine, and soft drinks. The El Cajon Museum stands as a tribute to the artist whose vivid portrayals of the American West captured the spirit of a bygone era. Olaf Weghorst not only painted the West, but also lived it, working as a cowboy before settling in El Cajon. His works have been displayed in the Oval Office by four American presidents. For tickets and reservations to the fashion show, visit weghorstmuseum.org. That's spelled W-I-E-G-H-O-R-S-T museum.org. Circle TLC Ranch Equine Therapy in Lakeside will host its 14th annual chili cook-off on Saturday, November 8th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. The cook-off includes tasting and judging chilies as well as a bottle of water. The event benefits Circle TLC Ranch's equine therapy programs, which provide a safe space for children, teens, and adults who have experienced trauma, abuse, mental illness, or deep personal struggles. For tickets and details, visit CircleTRanch.com. The La Mesa History Center features its 19th annual home tour Saturday, November 8th. Titled Golden Gems of La Mesa, this year's tour features classic homes in and around La Mesa's downtown village. Experience some of La Mesa's most historic, beautiful, and preserved homes, including a 1910 landmark, recently confirmed as a design of world-renowned San Diego architect Irving Gill. A shuttle bus will transport guests to each historic home. For tickets, visit LaMesaHistory.com, and this event does sell out quickly. The City of Santee hosts its holiday tree lighting Friday, November 21st, from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Santee Trolley Square. The tree will be lit up at 6:15. Other activities include sledding, face painting, live music, and photos with Santa. Parking is limited, so using the trolley's copper line is recommended. For details, visit cityofsanteeca.gov/calendar. Al Hardin, one of the original Beach Boys, brings his Pet Sounds band to the Magnolia in El Cajon on November 22nd at 6:30 p.m. The evening will be a tribute to the late Brian Wilson, Beach Boys founder. The concert will include performances of classic Beach Boys hits such as California Girls, I Get Around, Sloop John B., Surfin' USA, and Fun, 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 music that helped define the California sounds of summer. Tardine sang the lead on the Beach Boys' number one hit, Help Me Rhonda, and contributed arrangements and production on numerous tracks throughout their career. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1988 and received a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in 2001. For tickets, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com. The first ever Spring Valley 5K Community Run, Stroll, and Kids Sprint will start at 7:30 a.m. at Spring Valley Canyon, south of the Spring Valley Swap Meet on Thanksgiving Day, November 27th. Registration is required before November 30th. There will be shirts for those registering by November 1st to participate along the scenic trail. This event benefits the Spring Valley Community Alliance. For information and to register or volunteer, visit GoSpringValley.com. You can walk, waddle, or trot off those Thanksgiving calories at the Mount Helix Park Turkey Trot, held on November 28th, the Friday after Thanksgiving at 10 a.m. Meet at the fire station on Vivera and join the community walk to the park at the top of Mount Helix. For details, visit mounthelixpark.org. That's mthelixpark.org. Bates Nut Farm and Valley Center will host a craft fair holiday market on Friday and Saturday, November 28th and 29th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Santa will visit between 12:30 and 2:30 p.m. when you and your family can enjoy Polar Express tractor hay rides with Santa and take photos. Other activities include face painting, pony rides, live music, food and shopping from vendors of handcrafted goods just in time for the holidays. For full details, visit batesnutfarm.biz. Julian hosts its annual Country Christmas and Tree Lighting on November 29th from noon to 7 p.m. Enjoy live music all day, plus shopping at a Christmas market with more than 20 vendors. You can also stroll along Julian's historic downtown to shop at the many boutiques. The tree lighting takes place in Pioneer County Park in front of the Julian Pioneer Museum. Santa arrives at 6 p.m. to visit with the children. You'll feel a nip in the air, catch the aroma of wood fires, and maybe catch a glimpse of snow-capped mountains surrounding the former gold mining town. For details, check out visitjulian.com. You're invited to kick off the holiday season at Holiday Lights in downtown El Cajon on Saturday, November 29th from 4 to 8 p.m. in Prescott Park. The evening features festive fun for the whole family, including trackless train rides, live music, holiday vendors, a business walkabout with prizes, free photos with Santa, and more. Find more information at downtownelcajon.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Next up, just in time for Halloween, we'll be re-airing our special Ghost Stories of East County. We have a special treat for you today for Halloween, some local East County ghost stories. East County has many reportedly haunted places. There are many stories of ghost soldiers haunting the former Army barracks in Campo, the final home of the famed Buffalo Soldiers Cavalry Brigade. The old Julian Hotel's original proprietor from the 1800s reportedly haunts the establishment, startling guests in his former room who have claimed he's even tried to climb into bed with them. Out at the old Vallecito stagecoach station, the ghost of a bride who never made it to the altar and died along the trail reportedly roams the premises searching for her lost love, clad in the wedding gown in which she was buried. And out along Lakeside's Wildcat Canyon Road, if you see a woman beckoning to you to follow her off the road, don't go. Witnesses have claimed she turns toward her victims to reveal no face at all, a dark specter intent on luring motorists off an embankment to their deaths on a roadway where many people have died. But the most spirited area in our region is the Anza Borrego Desert, according to many detailed stories of ghosts that reportedly haunt those lonely trails, mountains, and washes in that harsh, forbidding terrain. Storyteller Cactus Jim has written, "Many travelers, prospectors, and adventurers have gone into the desert never to return or be seen again. Others have returned with gold nuggets and treasures so rare that we could only dream of being so lucky ourselves. Desert lore, stories, and quests for loot and gold have made men greedy. Gunfights, murders, and death from starvation have left many dead on the barren desert trails. Their ghosts still walk the mountain ridges, gullies, and deserted locations they once traveled or lived, spirits with unfinished business who cannot rest. Some guard buried treasures and lost mines, while others battle perpetually until death, forever replaying their last moments of life," Cactus Jim wrote. So here are a few of the most haunting tales in that region, adapted from Desert USA and the Paranormal Blogspot.
In the 1860s, when stagecoaches were the primary means of cross-country travel, a special stage set out from El Paso, headed for San Diego, with a box of coins. The stage that carried the coins had one driver and a guard. When the stage reached Yuma, Arizona, the guard fell ill and the driver continued on without him. That same stage was held up by robbers somewhere in the area where the route meanders into Carrizo Wash in East County's desert region between the Fish and the Coyote Mountains. The driver was shot during the robbery and the thieves stashed the coins in the south slope of Fish Mountain. The coins remain there to this day, they say, because there were too many soldiers passing by on the trail for the bandits to retrieve their loot. It is said that after the robbery, the dead driver and the stage continued through Carrizo, and after that, the stage disappeared, never to be seen again, at least not in an earthly form. But some witnesses say that the phantom stage still forges its way through the deep sand, pulled by a team of four mules on moonlit nights. The phantom stage is driven by a lone driver hunched over as if asleep. No passengers are seen on the stage when it passes through Carrizo Wash, hesitating only a moment, as if planning to stop where the Carrizo station once stood, though it's now only a pile of mud. The phantom stage continues on past the old station until out of sight. In the morning, you may think twice about whether you actually saw the phantom stage until you find ruts carved from wagon wheels and fresh hoof prints left behind by the ghostly stage that travels on occasion as if to keep the trail alive.
Vallecito is known for its ghost. Its history contains many murders, deaths, robberies, and other wicked tales. One well-known story involves a double murder at Vallecito Station. It all started with a stage holdup in which $65,000 worth of loot was stolen by four men on horseback who robbed the eastbound stage before reached Carrizo Wash en route to Vallecito Station. As the men fled the scene, the driver of the stage fired one shot, killing one of the four men. When he reached the thief he had shot, he found not one, but two dead bodies. The driver concluded that the leader of the band of thieves had shot one of his own men, so he would not have to divide up the loot. The bandit leader and one of the thief survived the robbery and buried their loot in nearby hills, then rode on to Vallecito Station for a drink and some food. But the two bandits began to argue while having a drink. The leader of the outlaws went outside to check on his horse, promising to continue the discussion when he returned. He did return, entering through the doorway mounted on his big white horse, and he shot his companion. As the wounded bandit was dying, he drew his gun and fired back at the leader, killing him off the back of his brave white horse. The white stallion, spooked by the gunfire and death of his master, ran off into the hills. It is said that when someone is in the valley, around midnight, near where the bandits buried their loot, the ghost of a white horse will appear from nowhere, galloping through the sand and then disappearing without a trace.
If you find yourself out late in the desert night, somewhere between the Superstition Mountains and the 17 Palms, you may see the apparition of an 8-foot glowing skeleton. A prospector by the name of Charlie Arizona first saw the ghost about 4 miles southeast of Borrego. It was a dark night when Charlie set up for camp. Just as he was settling down for the night, something disturbed his burrows. Hearing the frightened braying, he went to investigate. A shadow loomed large. Suddenly, he saw a large human skeleton with a lantern light shining right through its ribs. The skeleton walked in a crazy fashion, as if looking for something or as if it were lost. Heart pounded, Charlie watched, transfixed as the skeleton disappeared over the ridge. About 2 years later, two prospectors camping in Superstition Mountains caught sight of the flickering light in the distance and wondered what it was, but it quickly disappeared. One of the prospectors thought it looked like a skeleton carrying a lantern, but they figured it was just the fire reflecting off a rock. The two prospectors didn't think much of the incident until a year later, when a traveler came into the Vallecito station with the tail of a skeleton he saw wandering in the desert carrying a light. It wasn't long before the news of the skeleton got around, and two adventurers went out into the desert to search for this legendary skeleton ghost. During their third night in the desert, they encountered the ghastly lit skeleton. One of the men shot at it with a gun, but the skeleton continued on, unfazed by the gunfire. The two men followed the skeleton for 3 miles as it wandered in a strange and intermittent gait, over ridges and through valleys, before they lost track of it. Many believe that the skeleton is the ghost of a prospector who discovered and worked the Phantom Mine, which has been lost for many years. The skeleton is no better off than the rest of us, for he continues to search for the lost Phantom Mine, wandering the dark desert nights looking for his final resting place.
Not far from the Phantom Mine lies another place where skeletons have been seen. During warm summer nights, when the moon is full, ghosts dance at Yaqui Well. The ghosts are said to be the spirits of 3 emigrants who were traveling from Yuma to California. In search of a shorter route through the desert, the emigrants arrived at Yaqui Well, exhausted and near death from lack of food and water. One of the 3 travelers drank from the well as much water as he could hold. He died shortly thereafter. The other 2 men also drank from the well, but survived. While moving their dead companion's body, the other 2 noticed some rock specimens that fell out of his pocket. The 2 men were excited to discover the rocks contained gold, but they did not know where their friend had found the samples. Their excitement about the gold turned into greed and distrust. The 2 men began to struggle until one finally drowned the other in the muddy water of Yaqui Well. An Indian watched these events unfold from a nearby hill. He tried to talk to the man who had survived, but the emigrant was still so excited as he told his story that he entered a state of frenzy and ran off into the desert yelling, "Gold! Gold!" It is only during the hot summer nights of the full moon that the 3 emigrants return to Yaqui Well. One rises out of the muddy waters of the Yaqui Well. One emerges from the brush nearby, and the 3rd arrives in the cool breeze out of the wash. The ghosts join hands and circle Yaqui Well in a dance. Soon after the twirling begins, they disappear, leaving only the good waters of the well and a slight chill in the air.
In the 1800s, many stories began circulating about a ship lying half buried in the sands of the Anza Borrego Desert, and some say its spectral sails unfurl at times on a ghostly voyage, its phantom crew seeking their way back home. After the Civil War, many migrants who passed through the desert on their way to California reported seeing a Spanish galleon with multiple masts and swore this was no mirage. Most claimed that it was loaded with a fortune's worth of exquisite pearls. Many expeditions sought to retrieve these riches, but so far, none have succeeded. As the story goes, in 1610, King Philip III of Spain ordered Alvarez de Cordone to search off Mexico's coast and bring back pearls. Cordone hired 2 other captains, Juan de Iturbe and Pedro de Rosales. He also hired 60 pearl divers and had 3 ships built. In 1612, they set sail to plunder Mexico's west coast of its precious oysters. The ship paused repeatedly in its travels so that pearl divers could jump off and return with oysters they discovered on the ocean floor. Later, they found a village where Native Americans had baskets of pearls just lying about. The Spaniards arranged a trade of their fancy European clothing for the pearls, but instead swindled the Native Americans by giving them only rags and dirty cloths. Outraged, the Indians attacked the ship as it was trying to set sail. Cordone was hit by an arrow, and his ship was forced to turn around. But he ordered the other 2 ships on in the search of more pearls, commanding them to look north in the Gulf of California. As they journeyed up the Gulf, Rosales' ship struck a reef in a terrible storm. Before it sank, the crew transferred the valuable cargo to Iturbe's vessel, which sailed up the Gulf and eventually up the Colorado River and into the Salton Sea, or Lake Cahuilla, as it may have been called long ago. Some stories claim that the ship sailed into the Salton Sea to find the legendary Straits of Anian, an all-water route from the Gulf of California to the Gulf of Mexico. It's been said that the Salton Sea and the Colorado River ran high, filled with water during a flood that swept the ship into the vast inland sea. Some say that an earthquake happened, closing off escape. The captain was horrified to find the outlet to the ocean blocked. Water in the lake was swiftly evaporating. Soon the ship was beached on the California desert, many miles from the sea. The crew grabbed what few supplies they could carry and abandoned ship, trudging westwards toward the water. As the story goes, the survivors were finally picked up. Other versions of the tale involve a pirate ship loaded down with almost a million doubloons. Another story states that the ship was from King Solomon's Navy, carrying the 10 lost tribes of Israel to North America. Another variation on this story claims that the Kaweah Indians, knowing the Spanish were coming to take their riches and harm them, ambushed the Spanish party that came ashore. Then the tribe mounted a full attack on the galleon and after a fierce battle annihilated the entire crew. The Kaweahs began looting the ship of food and exotic items, but they could not move nor break into the heavy large iron chests in the hold. Then a storm brewed up, dousing the galleon. The Native Americans were forced to desert the ship, which broke from its anchor, drifted off into the storm, and sunk into the inland sea, taking its precious cargo with it. By the time the lake dried up years later, the ship had been long buried under tons of dirt, sand, and silt. How true could these stories be? Lake Kaweah did exist in the 16th century and had a tribe of Native Americans living nearby. It is possible that a flood occurred connecting the Salton Sea to the Gulf of California. The area between the desert and the Gulf has the potential to be hit with massive flooding, as we know from Hurricane Kathleen in the 1970s, which sent a 10-foot high wall of water across the desert floor. So yes, it is plausible a ship could have been carried in on the surge and stranded afterwards as water receded. The sheer number of stories told by both Native Americans and frontiersmen through the centuries suggests some truth to these lost ship tales. Expeditions in search of the lost treasure ship began in the 1800s, after travelers heard tales from Native Americans. Some claimed that the ship seen in the desert was haunted and could only be found at certain times of the year. In 1870, several Indians reported seeing the ship west of Dos Palmas. Later that year, the Los Angeles Star published a series of short stories about Charlie Klusker, who claimed to have located the ship and its broken masts. He was organizing expeditions to bring back the missing vessel, which he claimed was filled with crosses. It was reportedly 50 miles from Dos Palmas in a region of boiling mud springs. But there were no further updates, and Mr. Klusker appears to have simply disappeared, much like the elusive ship. In 1878, three German prospectors said they saw the ship around sundown, about 120 miles northwest of Yuma and 40 miles east of Indio. The sighting actually cost one of the prospectors their lives. The two survivors reported seeing an immense ship under full sail floating over the desert, sailing like a cloud into the sunset. The prospector who died went after it in the next morning, but never returned. A rescue party eventually found him dead from a lack of water, and strangely, he was completely nude. In 1905, a prospector named Butcher Knife Ike claimed to have discovered a fossil ship buried in the sand dunes of Borrego Springs. And in 1915, a Yuma Indian arrived in one town paying for his merchandise with pearls. When questioned, he claimed to have spent the night in a strangely shaped wooden house that was partially covered by sand. The people he spoke to offered him several hundreds of dollars for the night if he would take them back there in the morning, but he vanished overnight with their money. In 1933, Antonio de Fierro Blanco wrote a book discussing the story of Tiburcio Mancera, a young mule driver who claimed he came across the lost Spanish galleon way back in 1775. Back then, Tiburcio was a mule driver for explorer Juan Bautista de Anza, who was searching for a land route from Sonora to Alta California. The young mule driver said he went into the hold of the ship and actually saw a treasure trove of pearls, but was never able to relocate the evasive ship. Many treasure hunters have gone after the missing treasure of pearls, but none have brought back evidence of finding it. Perhaps because these are simply tall tales, or perhaps because the shifting sands of the desert at times reveal and at other times obscure the legendary lost ship. According to some storytellers, the ship itself, now bleached white and desiccated by the whipping sands, blown by the desert winds, has become a ghost. If you're out in the desert late some night, you may just see an eerie otherworldly glow and hear the singing of those long-dead sailors, the skeleton of a ghost ship sailing into the sunset or adrift in the moonlight. Is the mysterious ship laden with the fortune and pearls still out there in the desert? Perhaps sailing spectrally over the sands? Perhaps one day, when the sands blow the right way, we'll be lucky enough to find out.
Now we have one last hair-raising tale to tell, and this one is about the mysterious giant black cats reported to be prowling the wilds of East County. A reader tells us that sightings of huge black cats the size of mountain lions or bigger date back at least to the 1980s, when witnesses described a black cougar near Highway 67 at the eastern end of Poway. Zoology experts claim there is no such thing as a black cougar or mountain lion, though they once said the same thing about black bobcats until one was killed by a car and proof positive was found that these once legendary animals existed. Another possibility is a black leopard, an exotic pet that's escaped. But a more likely explanation for the many sightings here is that there are black jaguars in northern Mexico, big cats that when fully grown can be much larger than mountain lions. An adult male can weigh up to 350 pounds, though females can be about the size of mountain lions and cubs even smaller. Jaguars have golden eyes, squared heads, and very powerful jaws capable of taking down a full-sized crocodile in the wild. Officially, jaguars have been extinct in California for decades. But have they returned? Or perhaps they never really left. Yet another possibility is that jaguars have bred with mountain lions. That, too, is thought to be impossible, scientists say, but they once thought wolves could not breed with coyotes, until DNA testing proved that they did, and frequently. Many of the early sightings in San Diego County of large black wildcats have been made close to the border, some very near a gap in the border fence in Hukumba Hot Springs, where the terrain was too rugged to connect the fence up. Howard Cook, the former head of Hukumba's planning group, told me there have been regular sightings in recent years of a big black cat believed to be a jaguar, and also what appears to be a golden black spotted jaguar at Lake Hukumba. Such a pair could give birth to cubs that could be either black or spotted. He believes the big cats crossed over from Mexico, and the town librarian's son also saw what he described as a black panther crossing Old Highway 80 and Boulevard some years ago, though there's technically no such thing as a black panther either, a term used by ordinary folks to describe any of several big black cats. Gene Garrity told us that he and a friend, both farm boys, were out hunting above Loveland Reservoir south of Alpine back in 1994 when a huge black cat crossed the road in front of them. The tail was very fat and very long, he said. We got out of my Jeep, and we were looking at the paw prints in the mud. They were huge, with very huge claw marks. I estimate the cat was close to 200 pounds or more, he said. Assistant Border Patrol Chief Rosario Pete Vasquez told me, I saw one on Mount Laguna maybe 20 years ago. It was daytime, and there was snow on the ground, so you could definitely tell it was all black. That big cat weighed about 100 pounds, he estimated. One winter night in 2011, the reader reported that a resident of Hapatool Valley south of Alpine, Warren Storm Thunder, claimed he saw a jaguarundi, a black cat from central Mexico that is a little smaller than a mountain lion. Sharon Cremosis, a rancher and a friend of mine, insists she saw a large black wildcat slightly smaller than a mountain lion while driving her golf cart on a ranch she owned in a remote area of Boulevard near the border. A neighbor of hers has also seen black wildcats, she told us, and she's also seen mountain lions and is confident in her description. Ariel Brooke, one of our very own writers, who is also a teacher, saw a large black cat running across a roadway in Deerhorn Valley about a year ago. It looked like a black mountain lion and moved like a wild animal, she said, adding it had a long cat-like tail. In 2012, a resident of Aguanga near Warner Springs at the base of Cahuilla Mountain reported she heard her dogs going ballistic and walked outside to see a huge black cat perched on a boulder near her barn, which had a pig, a goat, and horses stabled inside. She said the cat was creeping up the rocks and had glistening circles of gray on its black fur. It was smaller than a mountain lion, and it sounds to us like a black jaguar cub, which can have spots faintly visible. On a blog post, she wrote that neighbors saw the same thing. And the Union Tribune published a report in December 2013 of a couple near Miramar Reservoir who claimed to see a large gray-black cat about 4.5 feet long that swiftly vanished into brush on a steep hill above the water. There have been many sightings locally, though none have been documented with photos, Perhaps because these mysterious creatures move swiftly and are often spotted at night. Plus, frightened observers may be more concerned with not becoming dinner than with snapping a photo. We first reported on these mysterious black cat sightings back in 2014, and our readers deluged us with their tales. A reader in the Anza area, in the northeast part of our county, says there were several sightings in 2014 in her area as well. A Pine Valley reader said she was putting out food for a small feral cat in her gazebo one night when she was startled to see what looked like a panther with an unusually strong build, a big head, and coal black fur that she believes was a jaguar. "I sure froze in my tracks," she told us, adding that she slowly backed up to her door just as the cat dug in its claws into the carpeting on the gazebo she'd been standing on a moment earlier and pulled up the carpet off the cement. On September 1st, that's just last month, Forest Service volunteers Peter and Chris Ruth wrote to warn us that hikers saw a large animal resembling a big black cat in a tree near Cedar Creek Falls in the Julian area, a popular hiking destination. Soon after, two women volunteers hiking the trail to pick up trash heard growling noises three times and promptly exited the area. Were those black jaguars? Or possibly black bears? Another species thought to be extinct here that have since been documented to have returned, though still rare. In 2013, a Border Patrol camera caught proof positive on an infrared camera in Inkapa where a black bear ran across the road. But the big black cat sighting at Cedar Creek Falls becomes more plausible given a second big black cat sighting reported on October 26, just days ago, to our news publication by Cameron Forbes, who says he and his son saw a giant black cat walking past a campground in broad daylight at Pines Anita in the Julian area, the size of a mountain lion or even bigger. These huge black predatory cats have also been seen in Spring Valley. Last year, a retired U.S. Navy chief, Manuel Domingsong, said he heard his chickens making noise and he went out to find a giant black cat inside the coop. It killed a chicken that night, and at 5 a.m. the next morning, he went out to check his coop and found the black cat back inside, and the rest of his chickens were dead. The large cat leaped over a fence right in front of him. 2 months later, a college professor, Dan Moody, told us that his mother, Dee Moody, a retired high school teacher, saw a jet black big cat weighing at least 70 pounds that sauntered across an open field beside her Spring Valley house in broad daylight. She described it as black and shiny, with a tail at least half as long as its body. And then on Christmas Day last year, a retired professor came across two dead coyotes at the end of her cul-de-sac on the eastern side of Dictionary Hill in Spring Valley. Their throats had been slashed, and the bodies were still warm. Only a very large predator, likely a huge cat, could have killed coyotes, which are themselves a predatory species. We do have coyotes across East County, and you may hear their mournful howls at night. But if you're walking out in the dark in East County, and you happen to catch a glimpse of a huge black shadowy cat, or hear the growl of a large animal, remember the sage advice of poet Ogden Nash, who wrote, "When called by a panther, don't anther."
We hope you've enjoyed these haunting tales from East County. We extend our special thanks to the participants in today's special presentation: Miriam Raftery, Leon Thompson, Devario Bell, Tasha Matthews, Liz Alper, and this is Ed Barena. From all of us at East County Magazine and KNSJ Radio, to all of you, our listeners, we wish you a chilling and thrilling Halloween. Happy haunting!
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show: Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jewell, Brian Bueco, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.